The high-profile movie release for today is Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Is that a rifle?
You don't know what a rifle looks like?
It's just swords were your thing and guns were mine. But I guess we're both doing guns now. I just didn't know that.
Well, that's intense.
I see it within you. Fear. Jealousy. Betrayal. It is our duty to cleanse the universe of this weakness.
You know, they told me you people were conceited douchebags, but that isn't true at all.
Dude!
I'm using my wrong eye.
Groot, put your seatbelt on!
So we're saving the galaxy again?
Yep.
Awesome! We're really going to be able to jack up our prices for two-time Galaxy Savers.
Yes!
Ron, Guardians of the Galaxy was one of those films that if you didn't know that it was from a Marvel comic book, you might not even guess that this was from that same universe because it had its own unique style
right.
And it had its own unique approach.
Right.
And it won over a lot of people, I think, that aren't into the superhero movies because of the level of wit, the humor involved.
Exactly.
And the sort of invention of plot. So now we've got Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yeah, and the gang's all back. And they kept the formula going, you know, that most of these Marvel movies were very serious, right? Maybe Iron Man had a few one-liners here and there, but this is at its source, for me, a comedy. One of the best comedies I've ever seen, and they kept it going, and it, of course, again, the band of misfit characters and the cast back with Chris Pratt, Zoe Saldana, Bradley Cooper doing the voice of that Rocket Raccoon, Vin Diesel back doing the voice this time of Baby Groot, who of course steals every scene that he's in, and they spend the money on the science fiction part of this, including the Stan Lee cameo and some deep cuts if you're a Marvel comic fan, and it's just not a cheater by any stretch of the imagination. PG-13, good for your older kids. If they saw the first one, of course, this one is very much the like the first one.
Now, have you had a chance to see it?
Yeah, I saw it on IMAX 3D. It was a blast.
So in terms of the summer blockbuster, has it begun with this film?
Yeah, typically the first weekend in May is that the start of the summer season, which means there's a big movie that comes out this weekend every year, first weekend in May. And then literally every week, all summer through August, there will be some big title going, and some of them huge titles.
Now, in terms of the sports film, the golf film has a particular sort of tone to it, and it's been a while since we've had a big film that has been a golf film, and now we have one that actually goes to the taproot, the source,
right,
to Scotland. It's
right.
Tommy's Honor.
I've taught him everything he knows.
Hold still, please.
That young lad of yours, he'll make a fine caddy one day.
Thanks, sir.
Why did you let him talk to you like that, Dad?
Because he has every right to. I work for him and the other gentleman.
Your station in life was set before you were born.
A caddy, son, you are. And a caddy you'll be.
I will see.
What else would you be doing?
Well, I'll be a golfer.
So, gentlemen pay you to play golf?
Hundreds of pounds, like.
What will you play for now, Tommy?
Money, glory, love.
I'm 28 years old. Best find yourself a schoolgirl.
You're a hero to this town, but a gentleman, you'll never be.
Back to the 1860s, and a guy by the name of Tom Morris, and he was a groundskeeper at St. Andrews in Scotland, and he was a player as well, and he had a son who was like the Tiger Woods of his day, young Tommy Morris, and it's kind of the story of how they changed golf, because it was very different back then. A lot of betting, you were sponsored, the players got paid sort of under the table, depending on how they did. There was a lot of match play stuff, not anything like we see today, but it became that. And so this is a PG-rated look back at the history of golf.
And in this film, it's as much about the class system as it is about the sport.
Yeah, yeah, because Dad, Tom Morris, was a groundskeeper, never aspiring to be more than that. And when his son wanted to go beyond that and become a professional golfer, so to speak, that really created a problem for the family. So there's a family drama involved. There's a love story, a romantic angle there as well. So it's going beyond the game of golf in the typical sports drama with some family drama there.
Eric Kuiper joins us from Celebration Cinema to talk about a new slate of indie films opening at Woodland, including My Entire High School, Sinking into the Sea.
We're sophomores now. We're like entirely new people.
First edition of the year.
All the news that's fit to
the press.
There's not much to write about at Tides High. We're a peaceful, uneventful place.
Attention, everyone! Pencils down!
Oof, gross.
Eric, I'm very intrigued by the title, My Entire High School, Sinking into the Sea, and I haven't heard anything about this film.
Yeah, I don't know if you know Dash Shaw. He's a pretty acclaimed graphic novelist, and so this is an adaptation of some of his work. It's an animated film, but it's a pretty atypical animated film in that it's mixed media. The colors are sort of crazy. If you look up the poster art, even just looking at the poster of the film, you get a sense of the tone of the animation of the film. But essentially what it is, it's this really quirky story about a couple kids who write for their school newspaper. They're voiced by Jason Schwartzman and Lena Dunham from Girls fame. They write for the school newspaper, of which, of course, nobody reads the high school newspaper. And so they're sort of those outsider kids. But in the process, they dig up in the school archive the fact that this high school has been built on a fault line. And the now the addition that's being built to the roof of the school, which is a new auditorium, is putting the high school in a very precarious situation where if there's an earthquake of any size, it will crack off of the cliff it's built on and fall into the sea, which, of course, about 20 minutes into the film, that's exactly what happens. You get a little tremor, the cliff breaks in half, and the school starts to float out into the sea and begin to sink. And it becomes this parody of high school life. And they sort of start, you know, the high school starts kind of eating itself from the inside out. And it's just nonsense and fun and satire. Incredible voice cast. Like I said, Schwartzman and Lena Dunham, Maya Rudolph, Reggie Watts, Susan Sarandon voices the lunch lady Lorraine, and she's hysterical. So it's a really fun, quirky, satirical comedy.
Well, tell us about After the Storm.
After the Storm, for people who are regulars of the indie film series at Woodland, they will recognize Kurita, the Japanese filmmaker from some of the films we played in the past. Most recently, Our Little Sister. He's probably most known for a film in 2008 called Still Walking. But he is, again, one of the most acclaimed Japanese filmmakers. All of his films are what I would call family-based character studies, and this is another one of those. So this particular story is around a man who is struggling with some gambling debt and addiction, and which has kind of ripped his family apart, and he is struggling to pay child support for his son. But another event happens in his life, which then brings him back to reunite in some ways with his estranged family. So it's a heavy movie in many ways, very beautiful look at family, forgiveness, and a number of those themes, but from a really incredible Japanese filmmaker.
And you also have the film Franz, which is a World War I film.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of World War II movies out here, but this is a post-World War I film. So this film feels very much like a classic film. I mean, it feels like you're watching something you'd see on a Turner Classic Movie channel. Like, it has that feel, like, in all of the best ways. So the storyline is this young German woman is grieving the loss of her fiance who was killed in the war. The war has just finished. And so the film opens in Germany, and she is living with what would have been her in-laws. But so they are kind of collectively grieving the loss of Franz. And a mysterious French man shows up at the grave, continues to show up at the gravesite and leaving flowers on her, deceased fiance's grave. And so the film, really the first half of the film, is her discovering who this man is and why he's there. And the film takes a lot of twists and turns as you discover why he's there, what his motivations are, how they might be mixed, and then their connection moving forward. It's mostly in black and white. The film's in German and French. It's mostly in black and white, but there's use of color a number of times throughout the film that really kind of punctuate some emotional spots in it. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. It has enough plot twists to really kind of make you feel like you don't exactly know where it's going, which is a good thing in my mind. But really sincere. It's a movie about forgiveness and grief, but it's not hard to watch. It's not one of those just oppressively heavy movies. So it's got a real emotional texture that I loved.
And it's coming out here on the centennial anniversary of World War One.
Yes. Good catch. Not on purpose for me. But that's true. So it's a really, I think, a really interesting way to look at, the effect of war after war is over. It's never over, right, for the people involved.
Now, there's a particular genre of films that's very close to people who love their pets, either yes. movies about dogs or movies about cats, and you've got a film about cats.
We do, and I am a self-proclaimed not that big of a cat guy, and I loved this documentary. So it's called Kitty, K-E-D-I, and it is about the cats roaming the streets of Istanbul. I mean, and maybe this is more common knowledge than it was to me. But apparently cats have been roaming the streets in mass of Istanbul, was Constantinople, for thousands of years. These cats largely got there by jumping off of ships that came into port, because every ship had a cat or two on them, and they would come and drop off their stuff and leave, and some of the cats would stay. So they have thousands of these cats that live in the city, and they're almost like birds. Like, I would say people have almost like a connection, like they accept them like you would accept a bird flying around. And so what this film is it's telling the story of a number of these cats, as well as a number of the people who are caring for these cats, and the society just sort of cares for them. And so you get this, you get a lot of probably projecting of people's selves on these cats. But what you see is sort of what I would say is sort of this mystical, therapeutic, spiritual presence that these cats bring to an otherwise already very religious place in the world of Istanbul. So it's made by this Turkish filmmaker who is from Istanbul. So it's sort of a love story to her own city. And I was totally captivated. It's beautiful, sort of an interesting travelogue and a great human story.
Eric Kuiper and Ron Van Timmeren from Celebration Cinema talking about movies opening today for Midday. I'm Scott Vanderwerf.